To us, this is ridiculous to the extreme.
That's what one group of people in Hong Kong feel about a mass arrest in that city. This is Thursday, the 7th of January, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, an eventful day for U.S. politics. The North Korean leader admits to failures. A large percentage of coronavirus vaccines shipped within the United States have so far gone unused. And the Islamic State terror group claims responsibility for the kidnapping and decapitating of 11 minors in Pakistan. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong police arrested 53 former lawmakers and democracy proponents Wednesday for allegedly violating the new national security law by participating in unofficial election primaries for the territory's legislature last year. Members of Hong Kong's pro-democracy opposition said their arrests were ridiculous. Alan Leong, a prominent opposition figure and founder of the Civic Party, said the mass arrests were linked to an unprecedented, independently organized, and not binding vote last July to select opposition candidates for a since-postponed legislative election.
To us, this is ridiculous to the extreme. When the Secretary for Security alleged that the 35-plus plan was subversive and pushed Hong Kong over a steep cliff, we think that who actually pushed Hong Kong through a steep cliff is the political power who behaved treacherously in not observing what has been promised us under the basic law.
Speaking at a news conference earlier in the day, police had said the activists and opposition members had been prepared to vote down the city's annual budget twice, which would force the city's chief executive to step down. Police said such acts may run counter to the territory's national security law, which prohibits disrupting and interfering with the city's administration. Leong said this argument was an affront to the constitutionally protected right to vote. He called for calm and for hope.
We know that many in Hong Kong are very disappointed, but we appeal to the people of Hong Kong not to despair. We should insist on speaking the truth and living in truth. There will be light at the end of the dark tunnel, and every dark night will see the dawn.
American-born lawyer John Clancy, who works for a prominent Hong Kong law firm that takes on human rights cases, was arrested when police raided its offices. China said Wednesday it backed the Hong Kong police to perform their duties in accordance with the law. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hua Chengying insisted that Hong Kongers' rights and freedoms had not been affected. She said some external forces and individuals in Hong Kong colluded with each other in an attempt to undermine the stability and security of China. The raids were condemned by international human rights groups. Antony Blinken, U.S. President-elect Joe Biden's nominee for Secretary of State, issued a statement on Twitter calling the raids an assault on those bravely advocating for universal rights, and pledged that the incoming administration will stand with the people of Hong Kong and against Beijing's crackdown on democracy. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China says it is negotiating with the World Health Organization over arrangements for a team of international experts to enter the country to investigate the origin of the COVID-19 pandemic. In his final weeks in office, the U.S. president targets imports of Asian tires. Trump bans transactions with 8 Chinese apps, including Alipay. India says it has not imposed a ban on the export of vaccines for COVID-19. Japan's COVID-19 cases reached a new daily record Wednesday as the government faced mounting pressure from health experts to impose a strict state of emergency for Tokyo. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Wednesday was an eventful day for U.S. politics. Vice President Pence defied President Trump by saying he does not have the power to reject electoral votes that would make Joe Biden the next president. Correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Even as the president was pushing Pence to toss electors from some battleground states,
if Mike Pence does the right thing, we win the election.
Pence issued a statement moments before presiding over a joint session of Congress to count the electoral votes, saying the Constitution does not give him the power to decide which should be counted and which should not. Shortly after the session began,
what purpose does the gentleman from Arizona write?
I rise up for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object.
Paul Gosar and Republicans began their objections to the tallies, starting in Arizona. That'll force votes in each chamber of Congress, which are certain to fail. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Later in the day, protesting supporters of President Trump breached the U.S. Capitol. There was confusion in the House chamber as the Capitol doors were locked and the debate over the electoral count was suspended. A representative from the Capitol Police spoke from a lectern on the dais and told lawmakers to remain calm and that more information would be available soon. The protesters stormed the Capitol shortly after Trump addressed thousands of his supporters, riling up the crowd with his baseless claims of election fraud. Protesters could be seen marching through the Capitol's stately statuary hall, shouting and waving Trump banners and American flags. Some House members tweeted they were sheltering in place in their offices. Some were handed gas masks due to tear gas inside the Capitol. The session of Congress came one day after voters went to the polls in Georgia that appear to have handed a pair of stunning victories to the Democratic Senate candidates over their Republican incumbents. For more on that, we welcome VOA correspondent Catherine Gibson in Atlanta, Georgia. First of all, explain why this election is so important.
Well, it's an unprecedented pair of Senate runoff elections, which really doesn't happen a whole lot in this nation, where the results were so close that they had to go to yet another round of voting. And furthermore, it happened that these two races were the ones that would decide the balance of power in the U.S. Senate. The Democrats needed to win both of these seats in order to get to a tie in the person of Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, who, of course, as the vice president under the Constitution, becomes that tie-breaking vote.
So where does the election stand now?
As of now, we are almost certain that Democrat Reverend Raphael Warnock has beaten Republican incumbent Senator Kelly Loeffler. He is going to be the very first Black senator from the state of Georgia in its entire history, and only the 11th African-American senator in all of U.S. history. So in this state with a history of racial equality and fighting for racial equality, that's a very exciting moment for many voters here. We're still waiting for the results from the other Senate runoff race between Democrat John Ossoff and Republican incumbent Senator David Perdue. One thing we know about the state of Georgia from the November presidential election is that the vote margins here are very tight. President-elect Joe Biden won the state by less than 12,000 votes, and it looks like that Perdue-Ossoff race is going to be just as close.
What is the overall feeling as to when the result of the other election that's still up in the air is expected?
Sure. So the feeling is that in this Perdue-Ossoff race, because it's so close, they may need to wait for those provisional ballots, which are votes from state voters from Georgia who live overseas, military service members. They get to vote too, but they have to mail in their ballots. That deadline is this Friday. If the race really comes down to the wire and each side really needs every vote, then they're going to have to wait to count those provisional ballots. But I think we should have a pretty good idea of who will be in the U.S. Senate seat by the end of this week.
Catherine Gibson of VOA joins us from Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks, Catherine.
You're so welcome.
Happening now in Asia, China has notified downstream neighbors it's holding back the Mekong River flow at a hydropower dam on the waterway's upper reaches for 20 days. Part, they say, of a new data-sharing pact. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Even though tough anti-coronavirus measures are in place, North Korea has opened a major multi-day political gathering in the capital of Pyongyang. The country's leader, Kim Jong-un, used the forum to acknowledge some recent economic failures, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
A global pandemic may be preventing large gatherings worldwide, but you wouldn't know that in Pyongyang on Tuesday. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un addressed a crowd of thousands tightly packed in an auditorium with no masks and no social distancing. His message was not upbeat. Kim admitted the country has immensely underachieved in almost all areas of a recent five-year economic plan. North Korea's economy may have contracted by at least 8% in 2020, according to some estimates. Trade with China, its economic lifeline, plummeted nearly 80%. Combined with continued international sanctions and recent massive floods, 2020 was one of the toughest years yet under Kim's rule. This week, North Korea is expected to set a new economic plan. But analyst Bong Young-sik says there may not be much the North can do to improve things right now.
There's no end in sight when it comes to North Korea overcoming the COVID-19 pandemics, especially when you consider medical capacity and the procurement of vaccines. North Korea is really far behind any other countries to get out of this disastrous pandemics.
North Korea insists not a single person in its country has tested positive for the coronavirus, a claim widely disputed by experts. According to a report in the New York-based daily newspaper, The Wall Street Journal, North Korea recently submitted an application to receive COVID-19 virus vaccines. Sanctions, too, are a major concern for North Korea's economy. But North Korea has for months boycotted nuclear talks with the United States. Instead, many analysts expect Kim could soon test a missile or other weapon at the onset of the administration of President-elect Joe Biden. It's part of the Kim family's message of so-called self-reliance, which yet again is a theme at this week's meeting in Pyongyang. Analyst Bong says the meeting is also an attempt by Kim to show that he still has public support, even during challenging times.
Kim Jong-un cannot afford to wait any longer, that he has to show up the unity and the loyalty of the general population through the Eighth Party Congress and the upcoming Supreme People's Assembly with a minimum amount of delay. Otherwise, the legitimacy and the control of the supreme leadership over the general population would be in a critical situation.
During his opening speech Tuesday, Kim did not mention the United States, South Korea, or nuclear issues. The event is expected to last for multiple days. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea rolled out mass testing for 52 prisons in the country after a massive prison outbreak and decided Wednesday to extend flight suspensions from Britain for 2 weeks, part of efforts to prevent the spread of coronavirus infections. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. More than two-thirds of the 15 million coronavirus vaccines shipped within the United States have so far gone unused. As Mariama Diallo reports, some states are vowing to penalize hospitals that fail to dispense shots quickly enough.
The rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine has been slower than expected, so now some states are stepping in to speed things up. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo says hospitals must administer vaccines within a week of receiving them.
Any provider who does not use the vaccine could be fined up to $100,000. Going forward, they have to use the allocation within 7 days. Otherwise, they can be removed from future distribution.
Andrew Cuomo said hospitals have been receiving vaccines over the past 3 weeks as part of a program prioritizing frontline medical workers, but they have only administered 46% of the first dose of their allocated vaccines. Hospitalizations in New York doubled since early December to more than 8,200, and the number of new cases has jumped 27% in the last week to more than 13,600 a day. Meanwhile, in Florida, there were long lines of people waiting to receive the coronavirus vaccine. People 65 and older and frontline healthcare workers are the priority groups to receive the vaccine. Florida's governor announced the state will allocate doses to hospitals that dispense them most quickly. In California, the worst-hit state in the U.S., Governor Gavin Newsom sounded the alarm.
Back to the last 14 days, close to 4,000 Californians have lost their lives. This is a deadly disease. This is a deadly pandemic. It remains more deadly today at any point in the history of this pandemic.
Newsom said California is also working to speed up vaccine distribution.
And you're going to start seeing the more rapid distribution of this vaccine. I can assure you that. Now, that said, it's gone too slowly, I know, for many of us.
As the number of coronavirus cases surpasses 20.8 million cases on Tuesday, according to Johns Hopkins University, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that nearly 4.6 million shots have so far been dispensed in the U.S. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
President-elect Joe Biden has selected Merrick Garland, the federal appeals court judge who in 2016 was snubbed by Republicans for a seat on the Supreme Court, as his attorney general, according to two people familiar with the selection process. In picking Garland, Biden is turning to an experienced judge who held senior positions at the Justice Department decades ago, including as a supervisor of the prosecution of the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. The pick will force Senate Republicans to contend with the nomination of someone they spurned in 2016, refusing even to hold hearings when a Supreme Court vacancy arose. But Biden may be banking on Garland's credentials and reputation for moderation to ensure confirmation. A 20-year-old university student, Ryu Hana, got cosmetic surgery on her nose in mid-December, figuring it might be the last chance to do it covertly before people started taking off masks as vaccines became more widely distributed. Libby Hogan reports.
Much of the world is waiting for vaccines to wind down the global health crisis in 2021. But for some South Koreans, it's a deadline to reshape their face and recover behind a mask. A face mask mandate in the country and working from home has fueled a boom for South Korean's famous cosmetic surgery clinics. 20-year-old student Ru Han Na shelled out thousands of dollars to have her nose done in December.
I thought it would be the best to get it done now before people start taking off their face masks when vaccines become available.
Ru took her courses online throughout 2020. And while she still can, she wants to recuperate at home and go out in public without drawing attention.
There will be bruises and swelling from the surgery, but since we will all be wearing face masks, I think that should help.
South Korea is a world capital of plastic surgery, even during non-pandemic times. And industry data shows it was worth about $10 billion last year. But Ru's surgeon, Pak Chul U, says there's been a recent surge of interest.
눈에 보여지는 부분이
Both surgical and non-surgical inquiries about eyes, eyebrows, nose bridge and foreheads, the only visible parts, have certainly increased.
And government data shows that over 10% of South Korea's emergency stimulus payments were spent in hospitals and pharmacies, just behind supermarkets and restaurants. Details of which hospitals and pharmacies weren't disclosed in that data. But another surgeon, Shin Sang-ho, told Reuters that people spending their stimulus boosted the recent revenue in his clinic in the glitzy district of Gangnam.
I felt like it's sort of a revenge spending. I've sensed that customers were expressing their pent-up emotions by getting cosmetic procedures.
This surgery boom may end up as a short-lived spark, however. South Korea's recently struggled with a third virus wave, with daily case numbers breaking records. Ruse surgeon Park says he's seen a number of recent cancellations by his clients as people stay inside to ride out the wave.
That was Libby Hogan reporting. We continue on VOA Asia. When Haleo Leba was forced to close down his quesadilla stand in Los Angeles because of the COVID pandemic, he thought he had lost everything. But instead of giving up, Leba found a way not only to stay on his feet, but also to help feed the community hit hard by the crisis. Gina Dulo has the story.
Haleo Leba opened his quesadilla stand in East Hollywood in 2019, and within weeks it became incredibly popular. But when the coronavirus pandemic struck in mid-March, accompanied by lockdown measures, Leba was forced to shut down. Without income, Leva had no money to pay the rent and his family faced eviction. That's when Leva decided he had nothing to lose and started a GoFundMe account.
It was such an emergency because if we didn't pay the rent that month, we would be technically homeless because we didn't have no food. We had it was catastrophic. But the reaction to the public to our GoFundMe was so great. And since they donated $7,000 or $5,000 initially, and so we have a couple of rents now, and so we felt that through that we had a commitment to pay back the community because people love what we were doing, and so we started going more into doing more cookouts.
Next, Leva reached out to a newly formed Instagram group, Los Angeles Community Fridges, and set up a neighborhood refrigerator. Anyone could leave food in that fridge, and anyone in need could help themselves. Leva himself started cooking free lunches once a week. With the help of volunteers, the lunches are distributed to the needy.
What's better than a hot meal? I know personally when I'm not feeling well, if someone drops some soup over to me, not only does it warm my body, but it does warm my spirit. It's one less thing that I have to think about.
Today's menu is fried chicken or beef with rice, salad, avocado, and cheese. Since Leva started organizing these community cookouts, he has made over 3,500 hot meals for those who need them. He admits it's impossible to help everyone, but he is doing what he can.
And all the things that people are experiencing with COVID, such as, insulation and not being able to talk to your neighbor and distrust and hate towards the government and all that kind of stuff, when people wait in line and then they get this food, it's just this kind of beacon of hope. And people smile and they have, such a thankful experience, getting food here. So that's what it is. It's more about that hope that we give to people to go through the next day,
Jenya Dulo for VOA News, Los Angeles, California.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.